This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL Draft.
Welcome back into the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, here with my other co-host, Dalton Miller, for this Wednesday edition of the Daft on Draft podcast. And with it being Wednesday, you know what time it is. That means it is time for a Daft or Draft edition number three, since we started our full-time schedule here in season. So before we dive into Daft or Draft and everything, Dalton, I have to bring you in. How's life in Portugal?
Oh, it's fantastic. The weather is starting to cool down a little bit, so we're able to get like evening walks in as well now. The morning walks have gone away because I have to go to the gym right at 9 a.m. The wife has to start work at 11. She has to go to the office. And then I'm full-time daddy duty. I mean, we sit here, me and Cruz sit here, we watch tape, and we watch Formula One or Formula Two or even F1 Academy. On the couch, watch a little bit of, you know, DBZ Abridged or a little bit of Bluey even. Bluey's a winner. We watch the English and the Portuguese version of it because we're all trying to learn Portuguese here still. But it's fantastic, and I am ready for this Daft or Draft episode.
So I've been really curious, and it was actually really bugging me today. I thought about it, and I was like, I don't know the answer to this question, and it's really killing me. What's the public transportation system like in Portugal? I don't know why that bugged the hell out of me today. Like, what's it like?
Yeah, I mean, it's really good. We don't really take it much because we have our own vehicle.
But there is a lot of driving,
and we walk everywhere here. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of driving around here. But there's buses. I mean, everywhere that you want to go, and we have a train station right down the street as well that'll take you to a bigger train station that can take you to like Lisbon or Porto or wherever you want to go in Europe, pretty much. So. The public transportation is there. We want to do a bunch of train travel, but we just haven't been able to get there yet.
What side of the steering wheel on?
Oh, that's only a British and British colonies thing. It's on the right side. It's on the correct side.
Okay, that's been bugging the crap out of me. I don't know. Yeah, the right side is the British colony side.
No, they drive on the left side. We drive on the right
side. Oh, I was saying the steering wheel. Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yes.
I'm talking about the side of the road. The steering wheel is on the left side. We drive on the right side of the road. But there are a bunch of English expats, I guess, or immigrants, whatever you want to call them, down here. And they do have, there are a lot of right-hand drive cars here, which I feel like would be weird driving on the outside and on the road here. But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk about college football.
It's probably time to talk about some draft prospects in college football. Yeah. So, again, Daft or Draft. This is week three of it. If you're a constant listener, you know what it is by now. Basically, we're buying or selling, true or false. We come up with three topics. We either draft it or we say, nope, that's Daft. Move on. That's not something we're buying right now. So, starting with the first one, we're going to go with the college football specific question. Last week, we did this regarding the college football playoffs and whether or how many SEC teams would be in it. This week, you're going to go to a Big Ten school and talk specifically about this school. So, Daft or Draft, Dalton Miller, Illinois will prove this weekend against Penn State that they belong in the conversation as a legit Big Ten contender.
So, we talked about this before the podcast episode, and we talked about it being a little bit twofold. I don't think that they are going to solidify themselves. So this is Daft. I don't think they're going to solidify themselves as Big Ten contenders. But that's because I don't think that Penn State is a Big Ten contender. And it is mostly, almost entirely down to James Franklin. I cannot trust a James Franklin coached football team. He's a great recruiter, great motivator. In game is one of the worst things I've ever seen. And it continues to this day. So I think that Illinois wins this football game. I do think that Illinois is a very good football team. But compared to Oregon, compared to Ohio State, I don't think they are a true Big Ten contender, even though I did profess my love for Luke Altmyer in the last episode.
You did do that. You comped him to Taylor Heineke. I love it. I'm also going to adapt this. They've been scoring over 30 points, and they did it against Nebraska. And Nebraska's got some draftable corners, but, like, I don't know, man. I don't see a way that they consistently score 30 points once they get into Big Ten play. And I think that Penn State has the firepower to do that pretty consistently at every position. Again, Drew Aller is kind of an anomaly right now in terms of draft prospects. You know, he wasn't very good last year. I still think he has the biomechanical stuff that is pretty rare that you see only a guy like Anthony Richardson or Will Levis have. So I think he does have that very rare ability to throw the football. He's played pretty well, but again, they haven't played anybody. So that's something I'm going to be watching too, kind of a side quest of this after draft, if you will. But I also don't believe it because I just don't think they can outscore Penn State. And, you know, Illinois of old, over the past 2 years, has had very draftable defensive talent. And I still think, you know, they've got some good players on their defensive side of the ball, but they don't have any Johnny Newtons. They don't have any Devon Witherspoons, any Quan Martins this year. So, not that they've overperformed, but I think they've graduated out of their kind of superstar status, if you will, on the defensive side of the ball a little bit. And so I just don't think they're going to outscore Penn State.
All right. So we have a difference of opinion on this game. I do believe that they're going to beat Penn State, and you do not.
Ooh, no.
We will find out. And that's why I said that this was a multifaceted after draft, mm-hmm. because I do not believe that they are Big Ten contenders, but I do believe that they are going to beat Penn State. And that might just be the pessimistic Pennsylvanian that I am when it comes to Penn State. But I think that they're going to win this football game.
I mean, they're a physical football team. And Brett Bielema has kind of built that physical brand, and they have an identity. And that's what we talked about when you talked about Altmyer last episode. Is Illinois has an identity, and they are going to execute. Just comes down to whether or not they have the athletes, the explosiveness, the Jimmy and Joes to compete against the guys that Penn State recruits, who are not known for having identity. So they're kind of polar opposite football teams in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Second after draft, talking about some quarterbacks specifically. Again, this is a pretty weak quarterback class. All things like there's nobody who's really separated themselves. There's nobody with top end tools. We talked about Aller a little bit, who has the biggest arm in the class, but has some other things to work through. But there are no like top end tools that really say this guy's worth taking a risk on the way Anthony Richardson was a couple of years ago, right? Really raw, mm-hmm. but one of one tools. Leaving it open to ask the question, after draft Dalton, if Nebraska quarterback Dylan Raiola were draft eligible in 2025, he would be the number one overall pick and first quarterback off the board.
I'm going to draft this so hard that if you were allowed to draft the rights to a player and not draft the player, so the player either stays in school for 2 years,
and you say in 2 years I get this player,
you know he sits out and he doesn't play, and maybe he can practice for your football team, but he can't play in games or anything like that. If that were the case, he would still be the first pick in this class. Even if he couldn't play for 2 years, he would be the first pick in this class. He is so fascinating to watch because everything he does, and listen, he's going to get comped to Patrick Mahomes, and he's going
to
get
comped to Patrick Mahomes
because of everything that he does, down to the mannerisms.
Yes.
It's so much like Kobe and Michael. Mm-hmm. It's so much like Kobe emulating everything that Michael Jordan did. It works, and it's real, and I have never wanted to comp anybody to Patrick Mahomes, but this is a kid who played college, or played high school football for John Kitna. John Kitna is the guy who really helped Dak Prescott turn the corner. He is a heavy socks, you're going to go out and you are going to make plays, push the ball kind of guy. And Dylan Raiola, for better or for worse, because he is very, very far from a clean prospect. Mm-hmm. The physical tools are just outrageous. Outrageous. The way that everything looks slow, very much like Patrick Mahomes in that way, like as a runner. I even think that he is a worse athlete than Patrick Mahomes is. He's just not quite as explosive, especially in the pocket. Like when it comes to maneuvering and getting away from things in the pocket, I don't think that he has the type of creativity that Patrick has. But any arm angle, any, you know, fade away, does not matter. I've never seen somebody's arm move slower throughout the throwing motion and just have the ball absolutely explode out of his hand. He's got a low carriage. He's got a low delivery when it comes to the way that he drops it down to his hip. It feels long. It's not long. It gets out quickly, even though his arm looks like it's moving in slow motion. Like everything he does doesn't make sense. When you watch the physics of what he does, it does not make sense. But God, are his tools special. And this isn't just a guy like, because Kyler was the frenetic mover, able to create, had the cannon of an arm. Then you had somebody like a BYU quarterback, Zach Wilson, who was, you know, a pretty springy athlete, had the big arm, threw 50-50 balls. The difference between those guys and Raiola, and why the Mahomes comps kind of work a little bit, just outside of the mannerism part of it, is that his vision when he is creating is outrageous. It is Mahomes-esque in the way that he is able to find guys, the throws across his body that don't make sense to guys who 95% of quarterbacks wouldn't even see at that point of creation. Mm-hmm. And he sees them and he hits them and he does it consistently. Now he's, again, not perfect. There are a lot of misses, some big misses still, because he is fading away unnecessarily. He is making things more difficult for himself. But I think as he ages a little bit, as he matures a little bit, he is going to iron those things out. He's going to play a little bit more on schedule. But those physical tools, you cannot teach what he has. And I am not somebody who likes to hype up freshmen in a world of juniors and seniors. But, I mean, this is an 18, 19-year-old kid who has it all as a potential NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the vision, because that's one thing that's really stood out to me when I've watched Raiola, is some of these windows that he's just anticipating and throwing into are just absolutely absurd.
He had a 35-yard triangle throw in this game that was just outrageous. You just don't see it.
Like posts across his body when the receivers aren't even out of their breaks yet into the middle of the field. Just like unbelievable throws. That, like, how did you see that? How did you see that opening up? I think I'm also going to draft this as well. I'm going to take it. You did. We don't need to reiterate every aspect of what we love about Dylan Raiola, because we watch the same tape and we talk about the same guys, right? I'm going to take it from a different perspective and talk about the NFL's absolute lacking of quarterback play right now and why some desperate team would take him first overall. David Tepper would take him first overall if he had the chance to try to recorrect whatever happened with Bryce Young. He's impulsive. He's a temper tantrum throwing toddler, and he wants the shiny toy. He would absolutely take him first overall, and kind of why I think he's going to take Travis Hunter first overall, to be completely honest with you. He wants the shiny new toy. But I think Carolina would absolutely take him. You cannot tell me Las Vegas would not take Dylan Raiola right now over Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell or any of these quarterbacks in this draft class, man. Like,
yeah.
And that's what it comes down to as well. We're talking about the 2025 NFL draft class. We're talking about, like, Carson Beck was seen as, well, you take this guy because he has a significantly higher floor. Well, he didn't against Kentucky. He showed you against Kentucky that his floor is significantly lower than what you thought it was. So is that the case? We've talked about Shador Sanders ad nauseum on this podcast. I don't think we need to go into all of that. Shador brings to the table, both on the field and in his own mind and ego, whatever you want to call it, right? outside of that, Quinn Ewers, like, I have some significant worries about Quinn Ewers' frame, specifically now that he's been hurt 2 years in a row. I have, that dude is rail thin. Like, I don't know if you've noticed it, but like when I watch this guy, he has very little bone on, like very little muscle body fat on his body, very little. And he's been hurt 2 straight seasons now. So I have some concerns there outside of the other accuracy and concerns that we've talked about with Quinn Ewers as well. So like, if those are the big three we're talking about, I think I'd take the shots on Raiola's tool over those three. If I'm an NFL team right now, again, Raiders, Raiders, the Browns, the Panthers, the Titans, like these are teams that are going to be picking high who need a quarterback, the Giants. Yeah. Like it's a quarterback needy team, and you can't tell me that there's not one team out there that would do it.
Yeah. I think that they all would. I do think that they all would. Since we were talking about Texas quarterbacks real quick, Arch Manning, obviously the name is there. I watched the tape from this past week. He was, there's a lot to like. There's a lot of, I mean, he is not Peyton Manning. He is not Eli Manning. He is much, much more than that as, you know, an athlete, somebody who is able to create outside of structure. He's got a super flexible arm. And he had a really nice triangle throw. It ended up being incomplete. It got broken up by a inside linebacker who just absolutely played the pole perfectly. But I do like the tools, but again, really, really thin frame with Arch as well. And he moves around a lot and he's going to take hits. And I didn't love the performance against a team that I felt like he should have looked a lot better against. A lot of misses from him as well. A lot of underthrown deep balls, which we have absolutely crushed Quinn Ewers for over the past couple of years. So I think there's a long way to go with Arch still. And that's why he was originally going to be a part of this conversation as well with Dylan Raiola. But I just think from what I've seen from Raiola compared to Arch Manning, there's no discussion between the two.
Right. Especially what Arch did against UTSA when he came in relief. Like, I think he set his bar very high. Like, everybody was watching that game to watch Arch Manning his first career start. And he didn't live up to it. He threw a pick on his first drive. Like, that's not the kind of way to do it against ULM.
And it was not a good pick either.
No. Who's going to finish near the bottom of the Sun Belt, like against a team that's kind of, like, and that's not to say that Arch, do I think Arch could have a better career than Quinn Ewers? Yeah, I do. Like, do I think Arch is a potential first overall pick next year? Yeah, I do. But you know, and even if we were framing the question as Arch, would you take Arch first overall based on tools and the quarterbacks that we've just discussed who are eligible for this year? Yeah, I probably still think I would. But again, Raiola has been so much more than that. Like Raiola, like, again, we have to wait 2 years. He could flame out. He could turn into a dummy on the field or off the field. But right now, like, yeah, that kid's is, he's got the goods. So
yes,
we could have gone in either direction there, but we'll wait on the Manning thing, even though he had a ton of hype coming into this weekend too.
Yeah.
Third Dafter draft, and we'll round up with this one. We've got perhaps the best matchup of all of college football thus far this weekend, Alabama, Georgia. In that this matchup are two 2025 eligible draft quarterbacks, one who has been talked about as the most consistent highest floor guy, and one that we've mentioned is we're just not there with him because he can't operate on schedule. He holds the ball too long. He takes a lot of sacks. We're not sure if there's an NFL quarterback there. Has been playing much better this year under Kalen DeBoer. So Dafter draft, Dalton. Jalen Milroe outduels Carson Beck this weekend in Alabama, Georgia.
So this is it's a tough question to answer because I think when you just sit down and you look at the numbers, he will outproduce Carson Beck. But Carson Beck hasn't ever really produced all that much at Georgia. It's not their type of offense. It's not what they do. They are very much a best, if not, you know, top two or three defense in college football year in and year out. They have the best athletes in the world going to their school. And they kind of play that ball control matriculation offense. And Beck doesn't really push the ball a ton overall. And Milroe is the kind of guy who's going to get out and make plays. He's going to make plays with his legs. He's going to throw the football a bunch. And we know that DePaul offense can really, really put up some numbers. So yeah. I think when we sit down and we watch the tape, we might say Carson Beck had a better game, especially because I do think that Georgia might have to try to keep up with Alabama a little bit in this football game, just because you're going to see them get some looks. We talk about it all the time. See the deep crosser, hit the deep crosser in that offense, and they have the athletes to do it. It'll be really interesting to see this Georgia secondary and what they're able to do with against these Alabama wide receivers in this game. But I do think that Milroe will outproduce Beck, but I'm going to say it's daft to think that he will outplay Beck, because I think that Beck is playing against the lesser defense overall.
Yeah. I'm going to.
Are we starting to believe, just flat out believe less in Beck, period?
Yeah, I think I am.
We wanted to see him kind of take the next step and produce a little bit more this year.
That's not even it. But like, if an NFL team, if you went back to 2012, would take Kirk Cousins third overall behind Andrew Luck and RG3. They might take him before RG3 if, you know, we're living in full revisionist history, right?
Yeah.
But Kirk Cousins would go top three if you could go back to that draft. And you could say, this is a quarterback who's going to play for 12 plus years in the NFL, and he's going to be the same guy every single year. So I think if you could tell a team that Carson Beck is going to have that kind of career, somebody's going to take him first overall. But what I saw in that Kentucky game is not a guy that I believe could do that, because he doesn't have the tools to elevate the guys around him. What you banked on was his ability to just distribute, see guy, hit guy, process quickly, get the ball out, and facilitate an offense. And against Kentucky, he couldn't do that. Like he couldn't even do that.
You know what it kind of reminds me of?
That worries me.
You know what it reminds me of?
What?
Reminds me of less arm, less athletic Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Because I think Carson Beck does a lot of the things that Trevor Lawrence did so well, the uncoachable things. Mm-hmm. But Lawrence was a phenomenal athlete. But like, even at the NFL level, it just hasn't really clicked with Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. From an elevate everybody else around you, play consistent football and produce.
Yeah.
I love Trevor Lawrence, but it hasn't happened in Jacksonville. And I think that he's in a pretty good situation with Doug Peterson now too. That roster is pretty good. Mm-hmm. The offensive line has always been, you know, a little bit of an issue, but like part of what we like so much about Trevor Lawrence was his ability to manipulate the pocket and kind of skirt pressure and create throwing windows. And that's something that we kind of liked in Beck as well. The uncoachable things, the ability to create from within the pocket, the ability to get the ball out quickly to where it needs to go. Mm-hmm. But at some point in the NFL specifically right now, you need to be able to make freaking plays. And Beck just isn't there.
No, it reminds me of Jared Goff near the end of his time with the Rams. That's what it reminds me of, where McVay was just done.
And Goff he is was kind done. Of the comp for him, right? Like Goff, Kirk Cousins, like that's what you want him. And that's the problem with Beck, is that's what you want Beck to be.
Yeah. And I think we look back now and we say, like, I mean, Alabama has the better playmakers offensively. I don't think that's even a secret. Yeah. I couldn't name a draft eligible Georgia wide receiver who is coveted this year. I know they have Oscar Delp and Ben, you're a second tight end, but like those guys have not done anything.
No.
So I'm going to draft this specifically because Georgia wins because they run the football. And that's just not a cliche that everybody's, oh, that's too high, run the football. You know, like that's like, it's everywhere right now. Everybody's like, oh, run the ball again, because football is a cyclical sport. But
and in college football, it's always still been a more run heavy.
And that's how Georgia wins, specifically because I don't think they have the talent at skill positions to target anymore in this year. So I'm going to draft it because Milroe's going to sling the freaking thing all over the field.
Yeah.
And he's if this game is even close, and if Milroe hits three of those things, the dopamine is going to be all over social media. It's going to be everywhere that Jalen Milroe is lighting up Georgia. Jalen Milroe is lighting up Georgia. That's what it's going to be. And he's got that explosive 17-year-old who is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Who is gonna make plays for him, and he's gonna use his legs too, which is something Beck doesn't do. can't do. He doesn't do. And so I'm absolutely drafting this. This isn't me drafting that I think that Jalen Milroe is a better NFL prospect than Carson Beck. But again, I'm increasingly down on Carson Beck. Just increasingly down on Carson Beck right now. And it goes back, like, if you can't draft consistency, which is what you were thinking you were drafting, then what are you drafting with Carson Beck? Like, what are you drafting with Carson Beck?
It's a question. It's a question that you can't really answer. It's a low tier starter, a very low tier starter.
Is it a starter? Would be my question. Is it a starter?
Yeah. But that's the thing with quarterback evaluation. I mean, you look back, Bryce Young was the number one pick. Mm-hmm. People thought that Will Levis was going to be the number one pick for a long time. Mm-hmm. Not working out. I mean, at the end of the day, even when you are looking at quarterbacks picked in the top 10, you're going to hit maybe on 50% of them. Yeah. And the other thing that happens with quarterbacks specifically is the situation is probably even more important than your own talent is. Yes. Look at Malik Willis right now. Look at what Malik Willis is doing in Green Bay coming from Tennessee. This is a guy who I told my dad to pick the Green Bay Packers to lose to the Colts. I picked the Colts. I said, hey, this is your keeper. Malik Willis cannot play football. Malik Willis went out and beat them.
And then beat his former team, like, too, completely next week. Yeah.
Different quarterback than he did in Tennessee. I did not think that Malik Willis would ever be a competent NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I still don't think he's going to start long-term.
No, he might not be a long-term starter, but even what he is doing right now is something.
He'll play for a decade doing what he's doing right now. Yeah, for sure.
Did not see him able to do that 6 months ago. So, I mean, his situation is so incredibly important when it comes to quarterback play. And so when you have somebody like a Jalen Milroe with a skill set that Carson Beck does not have, you have to pray for that consistency from Beck. But how can you bet on that consistency at this point when you have the physical tools from this other guy and you're an arrogant coach that thinks I can make that work? Because all coaches have that arrogance to them. Yeah. And so at the end of the day, what is making these teams pick Carson Beck over Jalen Milroe?
Yeah. And I also want to caveat, that was very harsh on Beck.
Yeah.
But mainly because he does have mid tools. But I think if you are a mid tools and a high processor who can produce and just get the ball where it needs to be, you can still play and start for 10 years. Like Derek Carr has done it. Kirk Cousins' arm is a little bit better than mid, but Kirk Cousins has done it. But it's only one game. He's played three games.
Way better than mid.
Yeah, that's fair. He's played three games this year, so that's probably harsh. But that was maybe the worst game
at the beginning
of
the year last year, where he was not very good either. Carson Beck. So, I think.
Man, that was easily the worst game of his career. I'm looking at his 2023 right now, and that was easily the worst game of his career. Like, he had a week 10 game against Georgia Tech where he. Week 12 against Georgia Tech, he went 13 of 20 for 175, 1-1. Outside of that, he threw for nearly 300 yards in every game up until that point. Over 250 in every game up to that point.
Carson Beck did last year?
Yeah. Yes. Over 250. 294, 283, 269, 338, 313, 389, 261, 315, 254, 306, 289, or 298, and within 175. So, That makes me skeptical. Is he a guy who needs to be like the Los Angeles Rams, Jared Goff? And Goff has been better than that in Detroit because Detroit doesn't have the weapons. But is he a guy that is like Los Angeles, Jared Goff, where when the talent wasn't around him or when the circumstance around him wasn't perfect,
he's unable awful. To elevate.
He was bad. Yeah, he is unable to elevate.
And that's kind of what we talk about with him is that's kind of what we see from him. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we see with him. And so if you're not able to bring a roster around him, and that's the problem with taking the quarterback at one, is your roster probably sucks.
Right.
So it's a tough discussion when it comes to Carson Beck. But I hate ending these on low notes like this.
Yeah. So Jalen Milroe, let's say it was Jalen Milroe then. Jalen Milroe, Betty. Keep going. Keep going. And maybe we can start start talking about Jalen Milroe a little more seriously.
Yeah, and taking him seriously as a quarterback prospect this year, even as an underclassman. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to track that. I mean, you have to be excited about that football game. Either way, it's going to be one of the best of the entire college football season. Very well could decide the SEC. So, that's all I got for this episode.
I think so, too. We're building
a tight end tomorrow.
Cooking with gas. Yeah, we are. Oh, dude, this tight end.
I'm so excited for this. This might be the episode I'm most excited about because I'm incredibly excited about this tight end
class. There's some people who are really down on this tight end class, too.
How?
I don't know. Maybe it's because guys like Delp and Jurasek and some of the bigger names that we talked about over the summer.
They haven't watched the guys that we've watched that are good.
Dude, Gunnar Helm.
They've been watching the guys that are at the top of the mock draft simulators that are not good.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Aren't producing all that great right now. I'm not going to say that they suck, but some of them do.
Yeah.
Anyways, we should get out of here before I get in trouble.
Sounds good. All right. This has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Come back tomorrow as we build a tight end.